So, I would like to start this last session of this series, which is concerned with the Canto 11, Book 11, Canto 1. There's only one canto in this book, The Eternal Day. The soul's choice and the supreme consummation. This is a 30-page canto. It's the longest. And it is categorically the opposite of the previous two books. In thematically, the previous two books are a dialogue between Savitri and Death, and they explore thoroughly the death experience and every possible negation of every possible form and level of life is explored. The whole negative aspect of existence is thoroughly explored in those two previous books. The reality of death and negation is the theme. And I pointed out that in the previous canto, the dream twilight of the earthly real, and the canto before that, the debate of love and death, in each of those cantos there is a long narrative passage. In the one, in the debate of love and death, 12 pages long, of Savitri formulating, exploring, elaborating thoroughly the value of death, the positive value of death. And in the second one, there's an 8-page long, we might say narrative, but it's not. Statement of Savitri concerning the nature of the world and love in relation to death. In this canto, there is a 13-page long statement, not of Savitri, but of the Divine Lord of Love himself, his statement, the voice of the Supreme Divine Love speaks at length. And that length is crucial. It is not a long passage to be digested in the normal sense of a lot to read at a sitting, at a single sitting, that sort of thing. Each of these three long statements is a dynamic building of energy, of consciousness, that raises the vibration of the whole being so that at the peak of that vibrational development, there can be a descent of a quantum of spiritual light and force. If that opening isn't prepared, if that sacrifice isn't performed, that descent can't happen. So the secret of savitri is this. It's not epic poetry at all. It is mantric poetry with a very specific intention. And if one doesn't read it like that, it is virtually meaningless. There's no way you can figure out what it means by reading it and thinking about it. And as a very, very prominent illustration of that fact, the first section of this canto, I'll read a few lines of it, it's only 2.5 pages long, but it is a description of heaven. And not a description of what heaven might be like if it happens to be real, according to some belief system or other. It is a description of heaven. And so I don't suppose that many of us know very much about that. And the less we know about it, the more we probably doubt its existence. But it exists. And it's not the heaven of this and the heaven of that which we get from the Veda. This is heaven itself. So just as we have noticed, or we've tried to notice, that Sri Aurobindo was guiding us through death for the last many cantos, which in itself is not something that we're particularly familiar with. It's not an empirical reality for most of us. But for him, it is, and so he can communicate it to us. So now, lo and behold, at the end of the death experience, there is heaven. Just like they always told us in Sunday school. Except that this is really it. This is the plug-in. If you want to know what it is, here it is, just plug in. The living LCD screen playing the only true video. Similarly, the next section it's the next one. Yeah, right after heaven, actually it's a little bit longer than 2 pages, I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong thing. It's 3 or 4 pages. Yeah, it's a little bit longer. But right after that, on page 678, no less, guess what happens? on the basis of what I've just told you, you might be able to imagine what happens on page 678.
This is following heaven?
Yeah. We meet God. And not this God or that God of this heaven or that heaven, but God Himself. The one and only Virat, the Lord Himself, who runs this show. And we are given an intimate introduction. Now, I'm not joking here. This is something real and unbelievable. So if you ever thought one way or the other about these two things, you may rest assured that they are both real and they are both accessible. Heaven and God. Then, following that introduction, God Himself speaks at length about such things as liberation, truth, eternal bliss, all the possible avenues available at that point. And he proceeds to offer Savitri a number of temptations, six to be exact. So we will review those temptations and her refusals. But I think that her refusals isn't as significant, aren't as significant in themselves as what is being refused. Because what is being refused is what one would normally expect to be accepted quite happily at the end of a long life of suffering and death. So this is Sri Aurobindo's ultimate effort to open the door at the end of the passageway of death to infinite liberation and eternal bliss, and to have it be refused for a purpose. Now, what purpose could there possibly be for refusing eternal bliss, one might ask? So, that's the ultimate theme of the soul's choice, because I'm sure that we will have that choice at some point. I'm sure that everyone has that choice at some point. I am sure. And then, finally, there is this 13-page long incantation of the Lord Himself about her and her mission and her choice and what that means for the earth. So that is the ultimate revelation of Sri Aurobindo's yoga and intention and spiritual knowledge. So what more could one ask? This is the book. So this is heaven. A marvelous sun looked down from ecstasy's skies on worlds of deathless bliss, perfection's home, magical unfoldings of the eternal's smile, capturing his secret heartbeats of delight. God's everlasting day surrounded her. Domains appeared of sempiternal light, invading all nature with the absolute's joy. Her body quivered with eternity's touch. Her soul stood close to the founts of the infinite. Infinity's finite fronts she lived in, new forever to an ever-living sight. Eternity multiplied its vast self-look, translating its endless mightiness and joy into delight souls playing with time could share in grandeurs ever newborn from the unknown depths, in powers that leaped immortal from unknown heights, in passionate heartbeats of an undying love, in scenes of a sweetness that can never fade. Immortal to the rapturous heart and eyes, in serene arches of translucent calm, from wonder's dream vasts, cloudless skies slid down an abyss of sapphire, sunlight visited eyes which suffered without pain the absolute ray and saw immortal clarities of form. Twilight and mist were exiles from that air. Night was impossible to such radiant heaven. Firm in the bosom of immensity, spiritual breaths were seen, sublimely born from a still beauty of creative joy. Embodied thoughts to sweet dimensions held, to please some carelessness of divine peace, answered the deep demand of an infinite sense and its need of forms to house its bodiless thrill. A march of universal powers in time, the harmonic order of self's vastitudes in cyclic symmetries and metric planes harbored a cosmic rapture's revelry. An endless figuring of the spirit in things, planned by the artist who has dreamed the worlds. Of all the beauty and the marvel here, of all time's intricate variety, eternity was the substance and the source. Not from a plastic mist of matter made, they offered the suggestion of their depths and opened the great series of their powers. Arisen beneath a triple mystic heaven, the seven immortal earths were seen, sublime, homes of the blessed, released from death and sleep, where grief can never come, nor any pang, arriving from self-lost and seeking worlds. Alter heaven nature's changeless quietude and mighty posture of eternal calm. Its pose of ecstasy immutable, plains lay that seemed the expanse of God's wide sleep. Thought's wings climbed up towards heaven's vast repose, lost in blue deeps of immortality. A changed earth nature felt the breath of peace. As one drowned in a sea of splendor and bliss, mute in the maze of these surprising worlds, turning, she saw their living knot and source, key to their charm and fount of their delight, and knew him for the same who snares our lives, captured in his terrifying, pitiless net, and makes the universe his prison camp, and makes in his immense and vacant vasts the labor of the stars a circuit vein, and death the end of every human road, and grief and pain the wages of man's toil. One whom her soul had faced as death and night, a sum of all sweetness gathered into his limbs and blinded her heart to the beauty of the suns. Transfigured was the formidable shape, his darkness and his sad, destroying might, abolishing forever and disclosing the mystery of his high and violent deeds. A secret splendor rose, revealed to sight, where once the vast embodied void had stood. Night, the dim mask, had grown a wonderful face. The vague infinity was slain, whose gloom had outlined from the terrible unknown the obscure, disastrous figure of a god. Fled was the error that arms the hands of grief, and lighted the ignorant gulf whose hollow deeps had given to nothingness a dreadful voice. As when before the eye that wakes in sleep is opened the somber binding of a book, illumined letterings are seen which kept a golden blaze of thought inscribed within. A marvelous form responded to her gaze, whose sweetness justified life's blindest pain. All nature's struggle was its easy price. The universe and its agony seemed worthwhile. as if the choric calyx of a flower, aerial, visible on music's waves, a lotus of light-petaled ecstasy took shape out of the tremulous heart of things. There was no more the torment under the stars, the evil sheltered behind nature's mask. There was no more the dark pretense of hate, the cruel rictus on love's altered face. Hate was the grip of a dreadful amour's strife. A ruthless love, intent only to possess, has here replaced the sweet original God, forgetting the will to love that gave it birth, the passion to lock itself in and to unite, it would swallow all into one lonely self, devouring the soul that it had made its own. By suffering and annihilation's pain, punishing the unwillingness to be one, angry with the refusals of the world, passionate to take, but knowing not how to give, death's somber cowl was cast from nature's brow. There lightened on her the Godhead's lurking laugh. All grace and glory and all divinity were here collected in a single form. All worshipped eyes looked through his from one face. He bore all Godheads in his grandiose limbs. An oceanic spirit dwelt within, intolerant and invincible in joy, a flood of freedom and transcendent bliss into immortal lines of beauty rose. In him the fourfold being bore its crown that wears the mystery of a nameless name. The universe writing its tremendous sense in the inexhaustible meaning of a word. In him, the architect of the visible world, at once the art and artist of his works, spirit and seer and thinker of things seen, Virat, who lights his campfires in the suns, and the star-entangled ether is his hold, expressed himself with matter for his speech. Objects are his letters, forces are his words, events are the crowded history of his life, and sea and land are the pages for his tale. Matter is his means and his spiritual sign. He hangs the thought upon a lash's lift, in the current of the blood makes flow the soul. His is the dumb will of atom and of clod, a will that without sense or motive acts, an intelligence needing not to think or plan, the world creates itself invincibly. For its body is the body of the Lord, and in its heart stands Virat, King of Kings. In him shadows his form, the golden child, who in the sun-capped vast cradles his birth. Hiranyagarbha, author of thoughts and dreams, dreams, who sees the invisible and hears the sounds that never visited a mortal ear. Discoverer of unthought realities, truer to truth than all we have ever known, he is the leader on the inner roads. A seer, he has entered the forbidden realms. A magician with the omnipotent wand of thought, he builds the secret, uncreated worlds. Armed with the golden speech, the diamond eye, his is the vision and the prophecy. Imagist, casting the formless into shape. Traveler and hewer of the unseen paths, he is the carrier of the hidden fire. He is the voice of the ineffable. He is the invisible hunter of the light, the angel of mysterious ecstasies, the conqueror of the kingdoms of the soul. Then, like an anthem from the heart's lucent cave, a voice soared up whose magic sound could turn the poignant weeping of the earth to sobs of rapture and her cry to spirit song. O human image of the deathless word, how hast thou seen beyond the topaz walls the gleaming sisters of the divine gate, summoned the genie of their wakeful sleep, and under revelation's arches forced the carved, thought-shrouded doors to swing apart, unlocked the avenues of spiritual sight to thy rapt soul that bore the golden key. In thee the secret sight, man's blindness missed, has opened its view past time, my chariot course and death, my tunnel which I drive through life to reach my unseen distances of bliss. I am the hushed search of the jealous gods, pursuing my wisdom's vast, mysterious work. Seized in the thousand meeting ways of heaven, I am the beauty of the unveiled ray, drawing through the deep roads of the infinite night the unconquerable pilgrim soul of earth. Beneath the flaring torches of the stars, I am the inviolable ecstasy. They who have looked on me shall grieve no more. The eyes that live in night shall see my form on the pale shores of foaming, steely straits that flow beneath a gray, tormented sky. Two powers from one original ecstasy born pace near but parallel in the life of man. One leans to earth, the other yearns to the skies. Heaven in its rapture dreams of perfect earth. Earth in its sorrow dreams of perfect heaven. The two longing to join, yet walk apart, idly divided by their vain conceits. They are kept from their oneness by enchanted fears, sundered mysteriously by miles of thought. They gaze across the silent gulfs of sleep. Or side by side reclined upon my vasts, like bride and bridegroom magically divorced, they wake to yearn, but never can they clasp, while thinly flickering hesitates uncrossed between the lovers on their nuptial couch, the shadowy eidolon of a sword. But when the phantom flame edge fails undone, then nevermore can space or time divide the lover from the loved. Space shall draw back her great translucent curtain. Time shall be the quivering of the spirit's endless bliss. Attend that moment of celestial fate. Meanwhile, you too shall serve the dual law, which only now the scouts of vision glimpse, who, pressing through the forest of their thoughts, have found the narrow bridges of the gods. Wait, patient of the brittle bars of form, making division your delightful means of happy oneness, rapturously enhanced by attraction in the throbbing air between. Yet, if thou wouldst abandon the vexed world, careless of the dark moan of things below, tread down the isthmus, overleap the flood, cancel thy contract with the laboring force, renounce the tie that joins thee to earthkind, cast off thy sympathy with mortal hearts. Arise, vindicate thy spirit's conquered right, relinquishing thy charge of transient breath under the cold gaze of the indifferent stars, leaving thy borrowed body on the sod. Ascend, O soul, into thy blissful home, here in the playground of the eternal child, or in domains the wise immortals tread. Roam with thy comrade splendor under skies spiritual, lit by an unsetting sun, as godheads live who care not for the world and share not in the toil of nature's powers. Absorbed in their self-ecstasy they dwell. Cast off the ambiguous myth of earth's desire, O immortal, to felicity arise. That's the first temptation. Her first refusal. O besetter of man's soul with life and death, and the world's pleasure and pain, and day and night, tempting his heart with the far lure of heaven, testing his strength with the close touch of hell, I climb not to thy everlasting day. Even as I have shunned thy eternal night, to me who turn not from thy terrestrial way. Give back the other self, my nature asks. Thy spaces need him not to help their joy. Earth needs his beautiful spirit made by thee to fling delight down like a net of gold. Earth is the chosen place of mightiest souls. Earth is the heroic spirit's battlefield, the forge where the archmason shapes his works. Thy servitudes on earth are greater, King, than all the glorious liberties of heaven. Second temptation. The soul in man is greater than his fate. Above the wash and surge of time and space, disengaging from the cosmic commonalty by which all life is kin in grief and joy, delivered from the universal law, the sun-like, single, and transcendent spirit can blaze its way through the mind's barrier wall and burn alone in the eternal sky, inhabitant of a wide and endless calm. O flame, withdraw into thy luminous self, or else return to thy original might, on a seer summit above thought and world, partner of my unhoured eternity, be one with the infinity of my power, for thou art the world mother and the bride, out of the fruitless yearning of earth's life, out of her feeble, unconvincing dream, recovering wings that cross infinity, pass back into the power from which thou camest. Break into eternity thy mortal mold, melt lightning into thy invisible flame. Second refusal. But Savitri answered to the radiant God, in vain thou temptest with solitary bliss two spirits saved out of a suffering world. My soul and his, indissolubly linked in the one task for which our lives were born, to raise the world to God in deathless light, to bring God down to the world on earth we came, to change the earthly life to life divine. I keep my will to save the world and man. Even the charm of thy alluring voice, O blissful Godhead, cannot seize and snare. I sacrifice not earth to happier worlds. Third temptation. But the God answered to the woman's heart. O living power of the incarnate Word, all that the Spirit has dreamed, thou canst create. Thou art the force by which I made the worlds. Thou art my vision and my will and voice. But knowledge too is thine. The world plan thou knowest, and the tardy process of the pace of time. In the impetuous drive of thy heart of flame, in thy passion to deliver man and earth, indignant at the impediments of time and the slow evolution's sluggard steps, lead not the spirit in an ignorant world to dare too soon the adventure of the light, pushing the bound and slumbering God in man, awakened mid the ineffable silences into endless vistas of the unknown and unseen, across the last confines of the limiting mind and the superconscience perilous borderline into the danger of the infinite. But if thou wilt not wait for time and God, do then thy work and force thy will on fate. As I have taken from thee my load of night and taken from thee my twilight's doubts and dreams, so now I take my light of utter day. These are my symbol kingdoms, but not here can the great choice be made that fixes fate, or uttered the sanction of the voice supreme. Arise upon a ladder of greater worlds to the infinity where no world can be, but not in the wide air where a greater life uplifts its mystery and its miracle, and not on the luminous peaks of summit mind, or in the hold where subtle matter's spirit hides in its light of shimmering secrecies, can there be heard the eternal's firm command that joins the head of destiny to its base. These only are the mediating links. Not theirs is the originating site, nor the fulfilling act, or last support that bears perpetually the cosmic pile. Two are the powers that hold the ends of time. Spirit foresees, matter unfolds its thought. The dumb executor of God's decrees, omitting no iota and no dot. Agent, unquestioning, inconscient, stark, evolving inevitably a charged content, intention of his force in time and space. In inanimate beings and inanimate things, immutably it fulfills its ordered task. It cancels not a tittle of things done. Unswerving from the oracular command, it alters not the steps of the unseen. If thou must indeed deliver man and earth, on the spiritual heights, look down on life, discover the truth of God and man and world, then do thy task, knowing and seeing all. Ascend, O soul, into thy timeless self. Choose destiny's curve and stamp thy will on time. Then, in its rounds, the enormous fiat paused. Silence gave back to the unknowable all it had given. Still was her listening thought. The form of things had ceased within her soul. Invisible, that perfect Godhead now. Around her, some tremendous spirit lived. Mysterious flame around a melting pearl. And in the phantom of abolished space, there was a voice unheard by ears that cried, "Choose, Spirit, thy supreme choice, not given again. For now, from my highest being looks at thee the nameless, formless peace, where all things rest. In a happy, vast, sublime cessation, no. An immense extinction in eternity. A point that disappears in the infinite. Felicity of the extinguished flame. Last sinking of a wave in a boundless sea. End of the trouble of thy wandering thoughts. Close of the journeying of thy pilgrim soul. Accept, O music, weariness of thy notes. O stream, wide breaking of thy channel banks. The moments fell into eternity. But someone yearned within a bosom unknown. And silently the woman's heart replied, "Thy peace, O Lord, a boon within to keep amid the roar and ruin of wild time." For the magnificent soul of man on earth. Thy calm, O Lord, that bears thy hands of joy. The fourth temptation. A second time the eternal cry arose. Wide open are the ineffable gates in front. My spirit leans down to break the knot of earth, amorous of oneness without thought or sign, to cast down wall and fence, to strip heaven bare. See with the large eye of infinity, unweave the stars and into silence pass. Fourth refusal. Thy oneness, Lord, in many approaching hearts. My sweet infinity of thy numberless souls. Fifth temptation. I spread abroad the refuge of my wings. Out of its incommunicable deeps, my power looks forth of mightiest splendor, stilled into its majesty of sleep, withdrawn above the dreadful whirlings of the world. Fifth refusal. a sob of things was answer to the voice, and passionately the woman's heart replied, "Thy energy, Lord, to seize on woman and man, to take all things and creatures in their grief, and gather them into a mother's arms." Sixth temptation. Solemn and distant, like a seraph's lyre, a last great time the warning sound was heard. I open the wide eye of solitude to uncover the voiceless rapture of my bliss, where in a pure and exquisite hush it lies motionless in its slumber of ecstasy, resting from the sweet madness of the dance, out of whose beat the throb of hearts was born. Then all the woman yearningly replied, "Thy embrace, which rends the living knot of pain, thy joy, O Lord, in which all creatures breathe, thy magic flowing waters of deep love, thy sweetness give to me for earth and men." So what follows is that 13-page statement of the Lord of Love defining the mission of Savitri. Pure power and beauty.